All right. Yep. Decisions. Welcome to the Michael Slate Show. I'm your host, Michael Slate. And yeah, we got a whole lot of decisions confronting us each and every day these days. All right. And very important ones. And that's what the show is going to center on today. At the back end of the show, we'll be talking with Tala, representative of the Revolution Club in Los Angeles. And we'll be talking about the repression of not the Revolution Club and others, other activists on campus and on UCLA's campus and in general. And basically the Nazification of the universities and why that's happening and why it's so damn important that we understand that and stand up against what's going on. All right. But before that, I'm very pleased to be bringing you an excerpt from a talk given by Bob Avakian that is basically called, well, this piece is called The Five Stops. And Avakian is the chairman of the Revolutionary Communist Party, as a lot of you know, and the architect of a whole new framework of human emancipation. That's the new synthesis of communism. And we're going to be hearing something called The Five Stops, Why This System Can't Be Reformed, from a new talk, Why We Need an Actual Revolution and How We Can Really Make Revolution. And I got to say this real quick, because these five stops, look, sisters and brothers, we are up against this stuff. We got to understand the reality of the system, and then we got to understand what it's going to take to actually stop all this. And Avakian is the key point in all that. The work that he's done is really the key to opening the door to dealing with all this stuff in the way that it needs to be dealt with and moving humanity onto a whole new plane. All right, so check this out.
Only an actual revolution can bring about the fundamental change that is needed. In 2012, in Revolution Nothing Less, I talked about the outrageous murder of Romarley Graham earlier that same year, shot down in his own house in the Bronx by the New York City police. He was only 18 years old. Do I have to tell you what race he was? His mother kept saying, "This has to stop." And his father repeated over and over, "Why did they kill my son? Why did they kill my son?" New York cops then loudly rallied around their fellow pig who murdered Romarley in cold blood, viciously taunting Romarley's family and loved ones, demonstrating yet one more time the ugly truth that in the way this country has been built, and for the powers that be in this country, the humanity of black people has never counted for anything. They have never been valued as human beings, but only as things to be exploited, oppressed, and repressed. 6 years later, and with cold-blooded murders by police continuing in an unbroken chain, I will say again now what I said then. How many more times does this have to happen? How many more times do the tears and the cries of anguish and anger have to pour forth from the wounded hearts of people? How many more times, when another of these outrageous murders is perpetrated by the police, do we have to hear those words that pour gasoline on the already burning wounds? Justifiable homicide, justified use of force by police. How many more? Romarley Graham, Nicholas Hayward Jr., Tamir Rice, Eric Garner, Darius Pinex, Oscar Grant, Manuel Diaz, Joel Acevedo, Laquan McDonald, Ayanna Stanley Jones, Sandra Bland, Jack Sun, Rennie Davis, Michael Brown, Freddie Gray, Maurice Granton, Harith Augustus. The list goes on and on and on. Thousands and thousands, especially black and Latino, and Native American. If this were the only thing wrong with this system, it would be more than enough reason to sweep it off the earth. But this is only part of the intolerable outrages that are continually perpetrated by this system and that cause so much unnecessary suffering for the masses of humanity. So let's go back to why and what it will take to make all the outrages really stop. Why are black people, Latinos, and Native Americans subjected to genocidal persecution, mass incarceration, police brutality, and murder? Why is there the patriarchal degradation, dehumanization, and subjugation of all women everywhere, and oppression based on gender or sexual orientation? Why are there wars of empire, armies of occupation, and crimes against humanity? Why is there the demonization, criminalization, and deportations of immigrants and the militarization of the border? Why is the environment of our planet being destroyed? These are what we call the five stops, deep and defining contradictions of this system. With all the destruction and suffering they cause, which must be protested and resisted in a powerful way, with a real determination to stop them, but which can only be finally ended by putting an end to this system itself. Why, along with all this, do we live in a world where large parts of humanity live in stark poverty, with 2.3 billion people lacking even rudimentary toilets or latrines, and huge numbers suffering from preventable diseases, with millions of children dying every year from these diseases and from starvation, while 150 million children in the world are forced to engage in ruthlessly exploited child labor. And the whole world economy rests on a vast network of sweatshops, employing large numbers of women who are regularly subjected to sexual harassment and assault. A world where 65 million refugees have been displaced by war, poverty, persecution, and the effects of global warming. Why is this the state of humanity? There is one fundamental reason. The basic nature of the system of capitalism, imperialism that we live under, and the way, because of its very nature, it continually perpetrates and perpetuates horror after horror. And in fundamental terms, we have two choices. Either live with all this and condemn future generations to the same, or worse, if they have a future at all, or make revolution. But what is the scientific basis for saying that this system is the source of all this? That it is built into this system, and therefore it is impossible to do away with these outrages through reforming this system, and instead it must be overthrown. Let's go back to those five stops. The oppression of black people and other people of color. This system in this country was founded in genocide and slavery. From the beginning, African Americans and Native Americans were treated as pariahs, a caste of people less than human and not deserving of the same rights and opportunities as the European settlers of the territory. White supremacy was poured into the foundation and into every institution of the country. The uniting of the United States was accomplished through the compromise written into the founding constitution that institutionalized slavery. And for generations, slave labor produced a great part of the wealth of this country. As I said in Basics 1-1, there would be no United States as we now know it today without slavery. That is a simple and basic truth. And then, when it was no longer possible to contain the conflicts that had been somewhat held in check by the founding compromise, the Civil War erupted between the Southern slave states and the northern states, which increasingly were based on the exploitation of wage labor by capitalists. But shortly after the end of this civil war, another compromise was engineered, which was a continuation of the original compromise under the new conditions. The country was put back together on the basis of reaffirming and reinforcing white supremacy. With the masses of black people still overwhelmingly in the South, subjugated and terrorized into second-class citizen status, exploited in conditions of near slavery and sometimes still literal slavery by white plantation and other property owners. And the land and way of life of the native peoples was further stolen through armed conquest and decimated by slaughter, confinement in reservations, and cultural genocide, which has resulted in the poverty, oppression, and repression that continues to be inflicted on Native Americans to this day. Under slavery, it was the armed patrols and militias organized by the slave owners that hunted down slaves who rebelled or just tried to escape and terrorized the masses of black people as a whole. After slavery, with Jim Crow segregation, it was the Ku Klux Klan, together with local sheriffs, who largely played this role. Today, in the conditions in which masses of black people in the ghettos of the inner cities find themselves, the role that was played in the past by the slave patrols and then the Ku Klux Klan and local sheriffs is now carried out by heavily armed urban police forces. This is a big part of the overall role of the police, which, as I said in Basics 124, is not to serve and protect the people. It is to serve and protect the system that rules over the people, to enforce the relations of exploitation and oppression, the conditions of poverty, misery, and degradation into which the system has cast people and is determined to keep people in. The law and order the police are about, with all their brutality and murder, is the law and order that enforces all this oppression and madness. In the days of slavery and then Jim Crow segregation after the Civil War, the oppressors viciously exploited and terrorized black people, brutally murdering those they saw as posing a threat or not staying in their place. But they did not kill off or incarcerate a huge part of the black population because their labor was needed as a backbone and crucial source of profit for the cotton plantations and the overall economy in the South and the country as a whole. Today, with great numbers of black people concentrated in the inner cities, and with many factories and other capitalist enterprises having moved away from the urban cores, the police have killed thousands of black people in the last few decades, and they play a key part in forcibly maintaining masses of black people in a situation where, especially youth robbed of any decent future under this system, are killing each other in the thousands, and millions are either incarcerated or in some other way under the control of the so-called justice system. Because white supremacy is such a defining part of this country, it is not just African Americans and Native Americans, but people of color generally who are subjected to discrimination, degradation, and brutality. And this applies now in acute ways to those whose roots lie in Mexico, El Salvador, and other parts of Central America and the Caribbean, which are tightly ensnared in a net of domination and exploitation by the imperialists of the USA, whose ravaging of these countries has driven many to emigrate to the U.S. itself. white supremacy and capitalism. They have been completely interwoven and tightly stitched together through the whole development of this country down to today. To attempt to really put an end to white supremacy while maintaining the system of capitalism would tear the entire fabric of the country apart. White supremacy and capitalism. It is not possible to overcome and finally abolish the one without overthrowing and finally abolishing the other. The oppression of women and oppressive gender relations. Not only is white supremacy completely interwoven and tightly stitched together with the development of capitalism in this country, but male supremacy is also completely interwoven and tightly stitched together with the whole historical development of the division between exploiters and exploited, oppressors and oppressed throughout the world, including the capitalist imperialist system which is dominant in the world today. Thousands of years ago, with the development of human societies in such a way that means of production, land, domesticated animals, tools, and so on, were no longer the common resource of people, but instead became privately owned. And with the division of labor resulting in women being responsible for child rearing and men dominating ownership of these means of production and wanting to pass this along to their male heirs and not someone else's, this led to the dominance of the patriarchal family, with the man having power over his wife or wives and children, and women in society overall being subordinate to men, with all the brutality and terror, both mental and physical, that has been used to enforce this, and the whole ideology and culture of male supremacy and misogyny regarding women as lesser, despised beings whose essential purpose is to serve men, that has rationalized and reinforced this inequality and oppression. This patriarchal oppression has also been bound up with the suppression and punishment of relations among people, including intimate relations, that run counter to and challenge traditional gender relations. It is crucial that there be determined struggle against this terrible oppression in all of its manifestations. But in order to finally abolish and move beyond all this, in society as a whole, and not just in one country, but for all of humanity, it is necessary to abolish the private ownership of the means of production, converting them into the common property of the people as a whole, and to replace the traditional patriarchal family with relations among people, including intimate relations, that are freely entered into and freed from all vestiges of oppression. This, of course, is impossible under capitalism. Only through the revolution to overthrow this system and uproot all relations of exploitation and oppression that are embodied in this system will it be possible to finally end the fundamental division in which half of humanity is subordinated to and dominated by the other half, and all the brutality and agony bound up with that. This is why, in the new socialist society that will be brought into being with the overthrow of capitalism, the goal, as set forth in the Constitution for the new socialist republic in North America, must be to overcome all traditions' chains embodied in traditional gender roles and divisions, and all the oppressive relations bound up with this in every sphere of society, and to enable women as fully as men to take part in and contribute to every aspect of the struggle to transform society and the world in order to uproot and abolish all relations of oppression and exploitation and emancipate humanity as a whole.
This is the Michael Slate Show, and we're listening to Bob Avakian, the chairman of the Revolutionary Communist Party. And what we're listening to is a piece called The Five Stops, why this system can't be reformed. It's a clip from the film Why We Need an Actual Revolution and How We Can Really Make Revolution.
Wars of empire, armies of occupation, and crimes against humanity. Raiding and other forms of violent conflict between different peoples can be found going back to early societies long ago. But the emergence of class-divided societies and civilizations based on conquest, slavery, and other forms of exploitation and oppression has for millennia led to wars that have caused death and destruction on a massive scale. This has been especially so once the production and exchange of commodities, things produced for exchange, rather than for direct use by those who produce them, developed on a large scale, and means of transport were developed that enabled commodities to be exchanged and markets for exchange to be actively sought over a large and increasingly expanding territory. Wars were then fought to conquer markets and trade routes, as well as sources of raw materials, and to enslave and exploit conquered peoples. With the development of capitalism over the past several centuries, commodity production and exchange has been greatly extended to become the generalized way in which production and exchange has been carried out. If you think about it, all the things that you use, or almost all of them, you do not make them yourself. You exchange something, namely money, to buy them from some other source. And this is what people all over the world are now doing. This is what capitalism has generalized. And capitalism has more and more tightly bound things together under its domination into an overall world system. But this system of capitalist imperialism is marked by profound divisions between different classes and groups of people within each country, between a small number of capitalist imperialist countries and the countries under the domination of these imperialists, particularly in the third world, that is Latin America, Africa, the Middle East, and Asia, and divisions between imperialist countries themselves, whose rivalry has revolved to a significant degree around their contention for control of colonies and people to exploit in the third world. And when, for a time in the last century, there were socialist countries, first in the Soviet Union and then also in China, there was a conflict between the imperialist powers and those socialist countries, which the imperialists worked to isolate, suffocate, and destroy. All this led to two world wars in the last century, in which tens of millions of people were killed, including huge numbers of civilians. Since the end of World War II in 1945, the divisions that marked the world within the overall framework of domination by the capitalist imperialist system have led to continual wars. Wars where imperialist powers have unleashed massive violence against people fighting for liberation from imperialism in countries of the third world, such as the war in Vietnam, where the U.S. slaughtered several million Vietnamese and poisoned much of the soil of that country with chemical weapons. War crimes and crimes against humanity that the U.S. imperialists have continued in all parts of the world, including today, for example, in the Middle Eastern country of Yemen, where because of bombing and other actions by Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates, backed, armed, and aided by the U.S., 1 million people, including large numbers of children, are suffering and many are dying from the terrible disease cholera. And 8 million people, more than a fourth of the population, are facing starvation. And there are wars between different oppressive forces, including wars where imperialist powers fight each other not directly, but through proxies, such as the war which has devastated Syria over the past several years, where the U.S. and Russia have backed, armed, and aided different factions. While another world war, which especially with the arsenals of nuclear weapons in the hands of the US and Russia, China, and some other countries, could lead to destruction and death on a massive scale, and could even bring about the extinction of the human race, while this has so far been avoided, so long as the capitalist imperialist system continues to dominate the world, and the profound divisions this embodies and enforces continue to exist, the danger remains of a far more devastating war than anything previously endured by humanity. Only through the overthrow of this system, including in its greatest centers of power in the imperialist countries themselves, an overthrow carried out also with the aim of preventing these imperialists from launching an all-out war of annihilation. Only in this way can we advance toward the goal of overcoming the divisions among human beings that embody exploitation and oppression and lead to violent conflict, and finally make a reality of the dreams and aspirations of so many for a world without war. The demonization, criminalization, and deportations of immigrants and the militarization of the border. The borders of this country were first established through war and repeatedly expanded through armed conquest of land, especially in wars against the native peoples and a war against Mexico in the middle of the 19th century. This war resulted in over half the territory of Mexico coming under the control of the U.S., and it was fought on the U.S. side for the purpose of expanding slavery, as well as greatly enlarging its territory. Since the end of the 19th century, the U.S. empire has been expanded not only by seizing countries such as the Philippines, Cuba, Puerto Rico, and Guam as colonies or near colonies, but also through invasions and other means, installing rulers dependent on and obedient to the U.S. Today, the U.S. has military forces and intelligence operatives stationed in over 100 countries around the world, and it provides military backing and other aid to governments, including brutally oppressive regimes that it maintains as part of the U.S. empire. And relying on its military as well as its economic power as coercion, U.S. imperialism not only continues to politically dominate, but to economically exploit and plunder countries throughout the Third World. Again, the countries of Latin America, and in particular Mexico, El Salvador, and other parts of Central America and the Caribbean, which the imperialists of the U.S. arrogantly regard as their backyard, have been the special targets of all this. Not only has the U.S. repeatedly carried out military invasions and coups there and backed murderous dictatorships with their bloodthirsty death squads terrorizing the people, but it has imposed economic agreements that have further bled these countries and intensified the misery of the masses of people there. For example, contrary to the lies spouted by Donald Trump, NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Agreement, engineered under Bill Clinton's presidency, has not resulted in the U.S. getting screwed, but has actually resulted in the ruin of large numbers of farmers in Mexico and increased the number of desperately poor people there, which has been a major factor in driving many people from Mexico to the United States. Trump only wants to make all this even worse. For all these reasons, along with other factors such as global warming and the accompanying crisis of water shortage in many countries, there are tens of millions of refugees in the world today, driven from their home countries and seeking asylum or simply a means to survive in the U.S. and in capitalist countries in Europe. And given all this, it is the height of hypocrisy and of cruelty for the U.S. government, and in particular the Trump-Pence regime, to talk about the right of countries to secure their borders and bray about building a wall to enforce this, let alone to denounce the masses of immigrants from a country like Mexico as rapists, drug dealers, and murderers, and to enact such barbaric measures as separating children, even very young children, from their parents if they are attempting to enter the U.S. without the required papers, and even if they are seeking asylum from persecution and violence. Here again, while determined and massive struggle needs to be waged against these inhuman actions by the U.S. and other oppressive governments, it should be clear that there can be no solution under the system of capitalism imperialism to the situation involving masses of immigrants and refugees. The only solution lies in the revolution to overthrow this system. A revolution aiming not just to abolish oppression, exploitation, poverty, and misery in one country, but having as its fundamental goal the abolition of all this throughout the world, and the elimination of all borders and boundaries that erect walls between the different parts of humanity. The destruction of the planet by capitalism imperialism. The very fact that global warming is one of the major reasons why there are today a greater number of refugees, 65 million, than at any time since World War II, is one powerful indicator of the severity of the climate crisis, which is increasing in intensity at an accelerating rate. The scientific evidence is overwhelming. The climate crisis poses a very real and growing threat to human civilization. And human activity, in particular the production and use of oil and other fossil fuels, is a major cause of this intensifying crisis. The accelerated melting of the ice sheets in Antarctica, the destruction of vast expanses of rainforests, the despoiling of other key parts of the Earth, including the oceans, with the terrible consequences for plant and animal species, which are also vital for human existence. All this can only continue and even further accelerate with human society under the domination of the capitalist imperialist system. Despite conferences and agreements which claim to be addressing this crisis, but which are dominated by the countries that are the biggest contributors to this crisis, despite talk and even some steps to develop sources of energy as alternatives to fossil fuels, despite all this, the very nature of the capitalist imperialist system dictates that competing capitalists controlling billions of dollars of investments, and the governments of the major world powers in particular, are compelled to contend with each other for markets, cheap labor and raw materials, including fossil fuels, and for control of strategic parts of the world. This leads not only to economic and political conflicts, but repeatedly to wars, which themselves have a devastating effect on the environment. And it is worth noting that the U.S. military is the single largest institutional consumer of oil in the world. To make matters even worse, this system has now brought forth a fascist regime to power in the U.S., which is determined to shatter agreements and roll back regulations that offer even minor, if completely insufficient, protections for the environment, and to unleash forces whose effect on the environment, if persisted in, could actually lead to the destruction of human civilization. Obviously, we have only one Earth as a home for humanity. And this climate crisis can only be fundamentally and ultimately addressed on a world scale. But a first great step, or leap, can be taken by wresting power from the capitalist imperialist system in its most powerful stronghold, and making this a source of inspiration and base of support for people around the world in rising up to overthrow and abolish all systems and relations of exploitation, oppression, plunder, and destruction of the environment and of human beings who can only continue to exist and to thrive through a rational and planned interaction with the rest of nature. From all this, it stands out very sharply that we live in a grossly lopsided world. A world where a few dozen billionaires have as much wealth as the poorer half of humanity, and a small number of ruling classes in a small number of countries dominate, oppress, and control the destiny of the masses of humanity, with consequences that are already terrible and could, before long, become catastrophic. And in everything that I've been shining a light on regarding the world we live in under the domination of capitalism, imperialism, we are seeing the consequences of a system based on the private appropriation by competing centers of capital of wealth that is socially produced through networks of production involving vast numbers, ultimately billions of people all over the globe, who are forced now to work in conditions and relations of production that exploit and dehumanize them. It is not simply greed that drives these capitalists to constantly seek ways to more ruthlessly exploit people. It is the fact that if they do not do this, or some other capitalists do it more successfully, that is, even more ruthlessly, then they will face the prospect of not just falling behind, but actually going under, eaten up by other capitalist sharks. It is the private appropriation of socially produced wealth and the anarchy, the feverish competition and contention that results from this, which ultimately underlies and drives all the horrors that are concentrated in the five stops and the conditions to which the masses of humanity are continually subjected. The solution is to replace this system of private appropriation with a system where the socially produced wealth is also socially appropriated by a government actually representing the masses of people instead of a class of capitalist exploiters. And this wealth is then utilized on the basis of conscious planning in the interests and for the benefit of the people of society and ultimately the whole world. How this can be done is spelled out in the Constitution for the New Socialist Republic in North America. This is the fundamental difference between the society and world we have with the system of capitalism imperialism that we are forced to live under and the world we could have. The bridge between these two worlds is revolution, a real revolution. Let's be honest. This is a difficult road, but there is no other way to finally put an end to the horrors that are continually brought forth by this system. And as hard as this is, it is possible if we go about it the right way, with the right outlook and approach, the right goals and methods, the right strategy and plan. So this is what I'm going to dig into through the course of this talk.
All right. That was Bob Avakian, the chairman of the Revolutionary Communist Party. And listen, you listen to that talk, you got to get a sense. You got to have a sense of what we're up against in the world today and what actually is possible if we actually can figure out the science and find the right path on all this stuff. And that's what Avakian's bringing to people now. All right. And I think it's really important that people go and they listen to this, but then go and hear the entire thing, all right? And you can access that at revcom.us. And later on, I'll be having that link on my Facebook page as well. So get that, think about it, listen to it again, roll it around in your head, and then get busy, all right? That's what we need to be doing, because this world is a horrifying place, and it doesn't need to be. But as long as we don't have the ability to understand what's going on and why it can't be reformed away, why it needs to actually, there needs to be a revolutionary solution to this. That's the only way that this is going to change in any fundamental way that's good for the people. And we need you to be paying attention to that. So check this talk out. Listen to it again. Spread it around to your friends. Write to me and let me know what you think about it, all right? Whether you agree with it, you like some things, you don't like some things. Let's just get this going, sisters and brothers, because time is running out, okay? And we got a whole hell of a lot to do. We're going to take a quick musical break and be right back, so stay tuned.
I waited all my life to play, but I still can't find a way. But if I work it one more day, I might just break the chains. I might just break the chains. I might just break the chains.
That especially where we from, where we grew up like a green thumbs, like a criminal, the only thing you could become. Look at what I became, something like a phenom, nothing but a G-thang. Things I've seen when I'm looking out of these frames, pictures I painted on the walls where we hang. From the trees we hung, strange fruit man, look at how we swung. How the hell you gonna tell a son who ain't have a father how to try to grow up and be one? Feel it in my bones and I'm sitting on the throne like a killer with the chrome. When I'm spitting out the poem, shed a whole lot of light on a little bit of home. Bam.
Welcome back. Yeah. That, I just can't say enough about that. All right. So let's just. Lupe Fiasco, just a great, great piece. All right. And get it and listen to it. All right. You know, just a while back, there was an action when Mnuchin was coming out. And I just, that name Mnuchin, saying that, it's kind of drives me crazy. But he was speaking at UCLA and his speech was disrupted. And he was not able to come away with this sort of white, pure thing that he was going to be doing and saying and putting out and advancing the Trump regime and their program, right? And then a little bit later, there were all kinds of other things. There were banner drops on the freeway downtown, on the 101 freeway downtown. And people that got dropped those banners ended up getting arrested and facing serious jail time. And all of this has been going on as the machine keeps rolling along. And people need to really stand up against this. And joining us today to talk about all this is a person who was part of this from the get-go, and she was actually arrested, faced some serious charges, and her name is Tala, and she's joining us to talk about what's going on. Tala, welcome to the show.
Hi, Michael. Thank you for having me.
Sure. Well, I started to hint at what actually happened. Why don't you tell people, though, because, you know, a lot of people, this is a very serious thing, and I think that we need a lot more people to understand what happened and what's the significance of it.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm a UCLA student, and I'm a member of the Revolution Club on campus. As you said, I've been charged with several misdemeanors for different forms of political protest, and one of those was defying the Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin when he came to speak on the campus last February. So I've been banned from the campus repeatedly. I've been charged with trespassing for attending public events, and shortly after that Mnuchin action, I defied this ban, which was verbal, and I had no way to contest it, to participate in a protest in support of immigrants, where I was not arrested or cited. And I found out later, months later, that one of these misdemeanor charges for trespassing is from that protest. And like you said, this is connected to the freeway actions, where members of Refuse Fascism and the Revolution Club engaged in an act of civil disobedience on the 101 freeway to sound the alarm against the consolidation of fascism. And those cases have outrageous details of their own, including heightened surveillance and infiltration and conspiracy charges, which people should find out about. But this is very obviously politically motivated, and it sets a terrible precedent, especially in a time where the right to dissent has been under vicious attack.
Yeah, yeah, it's extremely important. And that's something that doesn't get pointed out enough these days, you know, where it's actually people actually sometimes think, okay, well, whatever, we can all, you know, we'll just go, we'll move ahead, we'll pick at it here, pick at it there. But there's actually something that you pointed out when we were talking earlier that I thought was really extremely important because, you know, for a lot of people that listen to this show, a lot of people who, you know, over the years, all the way up through people going to school now, the campuses have a certain importance in terms of actually digging into truth, revealing what's actually the truth about what's happening, and also the resistance, the building of resistance around us in many forms. The campuses and revolt on the campuses is actually an extremely important thing. And I'd like you to talk about that because I know you mentioned that you've been thinking about that a lot, the strategic importance of the campuses in relation to why they're coming down so hard. And what is the strategic importance?
I think this has to be understood in a historical context because students have played a disproportionate role in movements of resistance historically, including in the movements of the 60s. And the campuses have been a place where critical thinking has been allowed to flourish to a degree, including by defying the great tautological fallacy of American greatness and moral superiority. So people have been exposing the crimes of the U.S. in this country and throughout the world. And the ruling class understands this. They understand the importance of students and the potential for people to raise their sights beyond just careerism and what they're going to do with their future that's just based on individualism and looking out for themselves, the potential for them to turn away from that and to actually think about the future of humanity and the future of the world and the role that they can play in all of that. And I think the forces that are aiming to consolidate fascism in this country know this too. And so they aim to stop that kind of powerful, explosive resistance in its tracks, and to stamp out every little bit of the truth that defies that narrative of American greatness. And so, like, they fear the truth because they don't have an alternative to this system of capitalism, imperialism, and all the crimes that it continues to commit against the masses of people throughout the world. They have no future for the youth, and they have no future for the masses of people. So all that they can do is enforcing their dominance through brute force, and they bring... I mean, more recently, they've been bringing all these fascists onto campuses who are debating about the humanity of Black people or debating the humanity of women. And when people stand up righteously against them, they face charges, they face the violence of the fascist base that goes and mobilizes people to support the fascists that are coming onto campus. So this is just, people have to righteously stand up, and then the universities, whenever people have been standing up against these fascists, they've been rolling out the red carpet and criminalizing the people who are standing up against it.
Well, let's talk about this because, you know, part of the thing, too, that I know you've been involved in and that has been a major point of contention at UCLA has been the question of Israel. Most recently, there was a whole big attempt to ban the Palestinian supports, the students supporting the Palestinian movements and the Palestinian people in the face of Israeli fascism, that basically there's been a lot of attempts to stop things like that from happening. There's people, I think even you guys had actually been, I don't know if you had were arrested for participating in something with the Palestinian students or not. I can't remember exactly, but there was a lot of controversy around it. So let's talk about that. And in particular, this question of Israel, because when you're bringing all this together and Israel pops out in a way that really both is sort of hitting at the development of the protest, but also the overall question of Israel and its role in the world today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the details of what happened on the campus was that we were a part of an event or a protest that was protesting a Zionist event that was happening on the campus. There were no arrests made, but there are charges being held over people's heads because this has been made a big deal among the Zionist forces and the fascist forces. And I think the strategic importance of this question relates to what I was talking about earlier about the rewriting of history and the need for these fascist forces to defy anything that goes up against the narrative of American greatness. So if people look at this question with a critical mind and they look at the role of the U.S. in the genocide, the carrying out of a genocide of the Palestinian people, they will see that the pro-Palestinian forces are standing on the right side of history. But if the existence of Israel is called into question by masses of people, especially like I said, students have a disproportionate impact in what happens in society. If people start to think about this question critically and rise up against that in mass, it's going to pose a really big problem for the U.S. to keep their grubby hands in control of the region in the Middle East. And so they aim, like I said, to crush any opposition against this. And it's really ominous because their ultimate aim is actually to make any criticism of Israel illegal by conflating it with anti-Semitism. So they're saying that you are against Jewish people if you say anything against the crimes that Israel is committing against the people of Palestine. And we can see how outrageous that is, even just with the recent example of the people who were marching up to the border in Gaza, who were just shot down. People who had no weapons or anything were just viciously shot down by the Israeli military. And so they aim to make any criticism of Israel illegal, and they aim to outlaw groups like the Students for Justice in Palestine and the Revolution Club, who refuse to fall in line with that. And that is acting, that's an important question in itself, and it's also acting as a spearhead to be able to crush dissent on the universities overall.
Mm-hmm. Now, you know, one thing I wanted to actually ask you a little bit more on is this question where you had said this thing about this Israel being the spearhead of, I think I read it in something that had been put out around this, that Israel's a spearhead of basically of the fascistization of the campuses. Because it's one thing in terms of them going out and really attack, you know, coming up and hitting, slamming that down on the people that are protesting. But this whole question of the fascistization of the campuses is a really big one, and one that people aren't paying enough attention to, it seems.
Yes. They have been doing this for a while. There have been campaigns that have been carried out, including by people like David Horowitz, who around the time of the Bush regime put out this list of 30 professors at UCLA called the Dirty 30, who were basically radically minded professors or professors who were more progressive, who were speaking out against Bush and speaking out against Zionism. And he was mobilizing groups of students, the little brown shirt Nazi students, to speak out against their professors whenever they said something against those questions. And so it's part of cohering a fascist base of students in the universities. And it wasn't just at UCLA. These things have happened in campuses throughout the country. But yeah, it's a question that has been taken to push forward the crushing of dissent. Mm-hmm. And to consolidate a fascist base of students mm-hmm. on the campuses.
Okay, that's great. And I don't want to miss these last two questions that I have for you, because it's really important. And we have about 2.5 minutes. But the club, what's the Revolution Club doing on campus?
So we are working to make a revolution. Like the system, I think it was well put in the clip from that talk that you showed earlier in the show. It has no future for the masses of humanity. And the question of what we can do about it has been hemmed in, and it's been limited to questions of reform. So we're aiming to break open the question of reform versus revolution on the campuses, but throughout society overall. And right now, when people are beginning to turn their heads and ask what brought us to this point where we see a vicious resurgence of white supremacy and male supremacy in an open way, and this American chauvinism, we are aiming to break open that question and to organize people to drive out this regime short of making revolution, but as part of making revolution at the soonest possible time.
Mm-hmm. All right. I have one more big question for you. And I really just, again, people got to pay attention to this. And somebody just pointed it out, instead of saying fascistization, I should have just said straight up Nazification of the campuses.
Yeah.
And a whole lot of things that are going on, because that's clearly what's happening. But let's get into this one last question, which is, look, how can people get involved in this? How can they get in touch with you? What would they have to look forward to? Like, if people are actually looking for a way to deal with some of this, to stand up and do something, and we say, okay, you need to hook up with the Revolution Club, you know, how can they do all this? What do you say to people that want to get involved with stuff?
So the first thing I would say is go on revcom.us and learn about the revolution and learn about the leadership for this revolution, Bob Avakian, who's the architect of a new synthesis of communism. People should watch the talk that you just played. And if people want to get involved with defying these outrageous charges in particular, you should go to refusefascism.org, and on the homepage of that website, there is a statement that you can sign to drop the charges, and there is a link so that people can donate for legal support. And people should also be a part of the defense committee.
All right, Tala, I want to thank you very much for joining us today, and let's stay in touch, man, because I really want to get hold of this and follow up on this, all right?
Absolutely. Thanks for having me,
okay.
Michael.
All right, take care now. All right, I want to thank everybody who worked on the show today. I want to thank Henry Carson. I want to thank my board op for today. What's his name? Teddy who?
That would be me.
There you go. That's what I was waiting for. And I want to thank all of you for listening. And basically, look, let's just jump into this thing, man. We got to change the world. We got to make a whole different world right now. We got to make a world that is not going to end up cold, hard rock just rolling around in space somewhere. We got to make a world that actually is fit for humanity, and that humanity can blossom and flourish on that. And that's what we got to do, all right? So you want to give me you want to find the show, you want to follow up other shows, go to the michaelslateshow.com, and you can write to me at mslate@themichaelslateshow.com as well. And we're going to go out now and be next weekend. This is a beautiful song, Teddy. I want to thank you very much for that, man. All right, take care. So we'll talk to you again next week.
There ain't no justice.
Build your walls, crawl into your holes, put out your signs, peek through your blinds, call me your cat, I don't mind.
Hey,
there ain't no justice.
Why can't we live our lives and be free?
There ain't no justice in that picture that you're painting of me in your mind. There ain't no justice.